Who hasn't at some point in their life wondered, why do men have nipples? We all have. But it took two guys to come up with the answer and put it in a book. Dr. Billy Goldberg and Mark Lehner, who have subtitled their book, Hundreds of Questions You'd Only Ask a Doctor After Your Third Martini. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having us.
And Billy, since you are an MD, you've gotten hundreds of questions like this?
Yeah, I've gotten, I can't believe I spend so much time talking about my nipples these days. But yeah, people ask these questions, usually not in the hospital, though. Usually it's at home, you know, I get phone calls from my friends and family, or at parties. At parties, people have a couple of drinks. And that's when they loosen up, and they're either dropping their pants to show me a rash or asking ridiculous questions. Yeah, the dropping the pants thing I can do without.
Yeah, well, we all can, frankly. So what's the answer?
The answer to the great nipples question is that basically when we're developing in utero, we develop as women for the first 6 weeks. Men and women develop the same way. And then at 6 weeks, the male chromosome kicks in, puts us down our male path, but we're left behind with a little memory from those days.
Those are our nipples.
The mammary memories.
That's right.
And so they're there from the six-week mark on and never go away?
They're there from before that point, and they never leave us.
Are there other things that develop in us, male and female, that are the same that do go away?
Well, we have a tail that we lose, but so there actually are some people who don't lose it.
I always thought this was fascinating, and I don't think a lot of people realize it, that men's testicles probably started out as ovaries, right, and descended.
Yeah, they basically follow down and they descend into the same thing.
Wow. All right. Well, while we're talking about these things, I've got questions for you of my own, but a listener named Jennifer emailed me today because I mentioned that you guys were going to be on the show. She wants to know why she has an outie.
Good.
Oh, Jennifer, you're outie. You know, don't blame your doctor. I know you want to blame your doctor. You think he was a bad Boy Scout or he was a bad sailor and he didn't tie a good knot.
She actually says that she's mad at somebody because she wants to get her belly button pierced, and having an outie, it just doesn't seem right.
Well, you know, the way she got an outie is basically just random luck. So there's no knot tying involved. That's what everyone thinks, and that's what I thought before I went to medical school. Basically what happens is we deliver a baby, we put two clamps on the umbilical cord, and we cut in between. And then the rest just happens. The belly button shrivels up, the umbilical cord falls off, and you're left with either an innie or outie based on random luck.
So there's nothing about a hernia involved here?
No,
sometimes people can have hernias there. That's totally different than just a simple outie. And people can have hernias, and sometimes it's hard to tell. But those usually can be pushed in and out. Or if you bear down or cough, your belly button will bulge out a little bit.
All right, Mark, I was on vacation in Maine a couple of weeks ago, and yeah. I don't know if you've ever gone into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Maine, but the water temperature there was 54
Hello.
Degrees. 54 degrees. I have a rule. If it's 40 degrees or more below my own body temperature, I try not to go in. However,
good rule.
Yeah, thank you. My 11-year-old daughter and all kids her age and younger frolicked around as if there was nothing wrong. So here's my question for you. Why do kids not have a thermostat?
I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
No, this is what I want to know.
Right,
every parent who's ever taken their kid to the pool on Memorial Day weekend when it is not warm yet wants to know the answer, too.
My kid, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and she can frolic in frigid, ice-cold water until she's blue. I mean, until she's turned blue. And then has to be torn out of the pool as if, I'm doing some enormous disservice to her life.
Yes.
That's a great question, Billy. Is there any medical explanation for why kids seem to their pain threshold, at least for cold water, seems to be higher than adults? But I don't know. I don't know what the explanation is.
There are some reasons that certain people can tolerate cold better than others, and there's a type of fat that you have, brown fat, that actually insulates you better, and that's what a lot of people have who live up in the Arctic. A lot of Eskimos have that. I don't know if children have a higher percentage. I would have to look that up. That's going to be in book two.
I was going to say, we've got your sequel.
Thank you, Paul. We owe you one.
Okay.
The term is Inuits.
Yeah, right. You can't say Eskimo anymore. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX, talking with Dr. Billy Goldberg and Mark Lehner, who have compiled a terrific book called Why Do Men Have Nipples? And all sorts of other questions, like what are eye boogers? And is it bad to crack your knuckles? And why are yawns contagious? But here's one I didn't find in the book. Why doesn't body hair, and by that I mean arm hair and chest hair and leg hair, how come it never has to be cut? I mean, the hair on your head keeps growing, or in my case, stops at a certain point, but you never have to get an arm hair cut.
Well. I might take issue with that. Certain body hair, I mean, something we deal with in the book that's an unfortunate accoutrement of aging is, for instance, hair that grows out of your ears and your nose. And as men especially get older, they find, you know, they have flowing tresses of hair growing out of places they want to have it growing out of.
Yes, what a lovely present for middle and older age.
Isn't it? I was talking to Billy the other day, and I said it's just your body's way of telling you, you know, if you want to get older, if you want to live forever, fine, but you're going to look like a troll who resides under a bridge somewhere. So maybe you should rethink this immortality urge you've got there.
Right.
But, you know, pubic hair can grow, and there, but you're right about arm hair. Good question. That's another, I smell sequel here.
I smell royalties coming to me, is what I smell.
Yeah, that's right.
Billy,
do you have any?
This is what always happens. Paul, you know, this is the problem. You know, I'm the doctor. Mark is a novelist and a humorist. So basically, he makes jokes, and then I have to, you know, be the dull guy or the guy without the answers.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's why my family, you know, for a while, my sister doubted that I was even a doctor, and she would call me dummy doctor. I don't know.
To you.
All right, let's move on to something else then. As a doctor, as a medical professional, do you see stuff in movies and on TV shows, and you just go, oh, what are they? That's not even close to being right.
Oh, you know, the funniest thing is actually when I watch ER or something like that, I love the way they order everything, and everything gets done. You know, I work in an emergency room in New York City, and if I asked a nurse to do the things that they asked, you know, I would get smacked, and they'd be like, honey, you do that yourself. You know, there's a lot of stuff on the movies and TV. We have a whole chapter on medicine from the movies and TV.
Where, you know, we answer questions like, can you really do the thing they did in Pulp Fiction where they jam a needle into someone's heart to save someone? And
right.
That famous Seinfeld episode where a junior mint falls into someone getting surgery. And are there really such things as werewolves? You know, are there really people who resemble wolves in some way or another? We try to have a whole big, rich, funny chapter about people's questions. You know, a lot of people get all their medical education from TV and movies.
Yep. So. Well, I think that shows like ER and others can actually help in a little bit of a way. But in other ways, I'm sure there are people going out there saying, that's what I have. What that,
right,
that's
right.
What I have, what that guy has. Honey, you don't believe me, but I have that. That's a pregnant woman, honey. But I have that!
Right. Yeah.
The other question I got to ask you about is about a month ago, I had, I don't know if it was the common cold or my allergies or whatever it is, but whenever this happens, as a guy with sinus problems, my body continues to make mucus well past the point where it needs to. And you guys are the first guys to write a book that I've ever seen with a recipe for homemade mucus.
That's right, that's right.
And my question is, why would we possibly need more mucus?
Well, mucus is like the universal lubricant. We have mucus everywhere. It's like the WD-40 of the body. It can lubricate anything. We wanted this to be a family book, so families can gather around the table and make mucus together.
But the real question I have for you here is, right, why would the human body, which, you know, the brain knows what's going on in the human body, why would it create so much mucus that the human body can no longer breathe?
Well, you know, that's when you're sick, and it's, you know, you know, that's a pathological state, so it's not intending you to feel well. We're able to handle it, though. That's what's the remarkable thing about the bodies. We're able to somehow make it through those days, expel that mucus. And the reason it gets thicker is because you have a cold and because you have this inflammatory response. And, you know, I think the body is really amazing. That's one of the things in medicine. And one of the things about this, how I got to write this book, is we don't have the answers to a lot of this stuff because science is is so vast and so complicated, and people don't know the answers to these simple things we deal with every day.
All right, one last question for you. This is something I know you touch on in the book, but it actually happened to me a couple of years ago that a friend was taking a new job. He was leaving one he'd been in for a long time, taking a new job, and the new company said, you got to take a mandatory drug test before you can work here. And we went out to breakfast that morning, and I had a poppy bagel, and he said, man, I wish I could do that, but I can't because I'm having a drug test. Now, talk about that, because there is some reality there, right?
There is reality there, and nobody knows exactly. There are a lot of different drug tests out there, and some of them have pluses and some of them have minuses. But, you know, poppy seeds are from the same plant that heroin comes from, the poppy plant. So depending on how much poppy seed you get and how sensitive the test you're taking, you can have a positive test. Now, if you have a simple one bagel, it'd be very unlikely for you to have a positive test. But if you have a couple of those poppy seed cookies or danishes, and really gorge yourself on a heavy load of the stuff, and you're taking a very sensitive test, you could test positive. So that's why a lot of these tests are imperfect.
There are all kinds of tests. You know, they have these tests where you just really swipe some blood or saliva. I don't know how they work exactly. And you'll get an instantaneous result, like a color change, like a pregnancy test. There are assays for all kinds of various drugs, and then much more sophisticated tests. But there is truth in that, because that poppies is where opium comes from, and ultimately heroin, and so it's the same chemical sort of basis for poppies as.
And for that, we thank our new friends in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And I thank you guys for coming on today.
Oh, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Dr. Billy Goldberg and Mark Lehner, why do men have nipples? Why is it bad to insert cotton swabs in your ears? What are goosebumps? And can you really get high from licking a toad? That one I know to be true. We'll put a link to their book on my website, harrisonline.com. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.